In February 2012, People in Power covered the Bahraini uprising, as Shia-led protests were crushed by the ruling Sunni dynasty.
I was bleeding. I tasted the blood of myself, but this wasn't a sign for them to stop. And the only thing which stopped them, that I pretended I was completely dead.
Now, as protesters seek to mark the anniversary, we're back too, to find out whether anything's changed.
One year ago, inspired by events in Tunisia and Egypt, protesters, both Shia and Sunni, took to the streets of Bahrain's capital, Manama. They were calling for democratic reform from the ruling Al Khalifa family. People in Power was with them at Pearl Roundabout. The Arab Spring was underway and hope was in the air.
This is our golden chance. It's the time. It's time we grab it. Either we grab it now or never.
Dr. Nada Daif, a medical volunteer, was typical of the idealistic young people who'd pledged to protest until their demands were met. But the government was in no mood to concede. 3 days later,
without any warnings, without anything, they start shooting us with the tear gas. That moment, at least 10 of the policemen came and attacked me, and I was bleeding. I tasted the blood of myself, but this wasn't a sign for them to stop. And the only thing which stopped them, that I pretended I was completely dead.
Four people died that night. Hundreds more were beaten, shot, and nearly suffocated by tear gas, including doctors who were trying to help. Within hours, police had cleared the square. When protesters tried to return the next day, images were flashed around the world. Over 4 days, 9 protesters had been killed. Shocked by events, the government capitulated. Protesters were allowed back to Pearl Roundabout, and political prisoners were released. Prominent activist Ali Abdelimam, known as the Bahrain blogger, was among them. Hope was rekindled. Opposition politician Ibrahim Sharif had been in the crowd from day one. He's a Sunni, determined to counter government claims that this was a Shia uprising, orchestrated by Iran, aimed at destabilizing the country. Sharif was one of a number of politicians, including those from the principal opposition party Al-Wefaq, who were optimistic about talks on political reform with Bahrain's crown prince, Salman bin Isa Al-Khalifa. But a leading Shia politician, Hassan Mushaima, after years of dealing with Bahrain's royal family, doubted their sincerity.
Al-Khalifa's or the regime is not believing of democracy, is not believing of human rights, is not believing of dialogue. So it's just only just they want to show the world that we have this discussed and we have started, of course, the dialogue, which is not true.
As days wore on, hope was tempered by fear.
I think they're going to target one by one, one by one. Whoever appeared on a camera, the thing is we stand brave enough to call the whole world that we don't want this regime to be in power anymore. I obviously said that everyone would be targeted. And I was correct.
On the 15th of March, the government passed an emergency National Safety Act. Over the following days, troops from Saudi Arabia and other GCC states entered Bahrain in support of the regime. Protesters were rounded up, Pearl Roundabout was cleared, and all demonstrations banned. Even the iconic Pearl Monument was demolished.
It was the moment of the crackdown, and there was checkpoints everywhere in the country. And I passed through one of those checkpoints where I get arrested.
It was on the 19th of March, 3 a.m. in the morning. They came to my house. They were wearing these civilian clothes and they were masked. It was so terrifying. I didn't know who those people were. They were holding these all sorts of guns and they just, you are coming with us, we're gonna teach you a lesson. They took me, I was handcuffed and I was blindfolded. And they started threatening me immediately. They were talking about weapons and occupying hospital and killing people and overthrowing of the regime.
At the beginning, the officers told me that you would be held only for a day. But after him discovering that I appeared on Al Jazeera, then the problem began. We heard that there were four people being killed inside the prison. And we saw that fear was true because we were tortured so badly. I was handcuffed and blindfolded as well. And I was very badly beaten in the face. Punched everywhere in the body as well. And that time was so, we had so much fear.
Nada Daif was beaten and worse.
I was electrocuted at the first session. It came out of nowhere. They just put that device on my face. My head was gonna blow off. And they did that for nothing. I wasn't even asked, they didn't even ask me a question.
Ali Abdelimam, the Bahrain blogger, and Abdali Al-Singas both managed to escape into hiding before their homes were raided. Hassan Mashema was arrested and sentenced to life in prison for attempting to overthrow the state. His family now get two phone calls a week. He responds with a defiant message from behind bars.
Ibrahim was arrested along with seven political leaders. They were all of them, Ibrahim and the rest, were tortured and they were put in solitary confinement until the 18th of June.
Ibrahim Sharif's arrest was a huge shock to his wife. In mid-March, opposition parties had been confident of securing a deal with the Crown Prince.
I would say that Ibrahim had faith in the Crown Prince. They were asking the Crown Prince to get out and tell the people that there is a starting plan. But then the Saudi army came in and another dark stage of security law came into existence.
These are just six stories of many. According to the Bahrain Center for Human Rights, since 14th of February 2011, over 2,000 Bahrainis have been arrested, 1,800 allegedly tortured, and 62 killed.
There are lots of misinformation that have been spread about this. We've been part of this. We did not tackle the situation with security procedures. We tackled the situation by call for dialogue from the first moment.
Now, a year on, Bahraini ministers acknowledge that the government made mistakes, although they defend their actions at the time with a reminder of how chaotic things were.
Manama was taken. The Ministry of Justice here, we were not able to get out of the ministry. When you see some people who are putting civilians between you and them, and they said that if you want to get me, step on them. I will step on them. This is something that cannot be accepted. When we deal with the situation here in Bahrain, we know exactly that security of people is the main concern. And we know exactly that the use of Molotov and blocking roads will lead to a more aggravating circumstances.
Back in March, few places were causing authorities more concern than Bahrain's main Salmania Hospital. Its chief executive, Dr. Walid Almana, plays videos of the hospital at the time.
This is a car parking. All these people, all the times, even night, daytime, the number reaching the car box about like 2,000 or more than that.
The video appears to show medical staff joining the protesters.
Many violations against the medical ethics, patients' rights. There was a discrimination that calling patients is non-Bahraini and they don't have to treat. Their hands were tight and they were not treated properly.
In fact, his administration had been criticized too. But the truth of what actually happened here is still hotly disputed. Then everything changed. With the implementation of the National Safety Act, the hospital was taken over by the military. Activists reported that injured protesters were hunted down and shot in these corridors, that a torture ward was set up, and medical staff held hostage.
Pointing on sixth floor.
Dr. Almana says allegations of abuses are untrue.
And here on the right is the sixth ward 63. You know that ward 63, they were claiming that is like the ward which is only for torturing, and patients were tortured here in the hospital. They were given the proper treatment here. Thanks God that there was no evidence for torturing in this ward.
But on a mobile phone clip filmed just after the military occupation, Dr. Almana is seen recounting his own experience of abuse. For their part, Bahraini police claimed the hospital had been used as the base for an attempted coup. They claimed to have found laptops and two Kalashnikovs concealed in the ceiling, along with other weapons and ammunition.
I was charged for occupying the hospital using force and weapons. I was charged for overthrowing of the regime of Bahrain.
In the national safety trials that followed the occupation of Salmania Hospital, 64 medics were arrested. Nada Daif and 19 others were found guilty of inciting the overthrow of the state and provoking sectarian hatred. The weapons police claimed to have unearthed in the hospital were presented as evidence.
It's so awful, you know, just to remember the military court and the people there. They call it a national safety court, which is not. That's a big lie. It's a military court.
All the doctors said they'd been tortured, yet all were sentenced to long prison terms. Nada Daif, who didn't even work at Salmania, got 15 years. She and the others are out on bail, pending appeal.
At the end, in 4 or 5 sessions, they finished the whole thing. They wrapped it up so quickly. 15 years, okay, fine, you. 15, 15, 15, 10, 10, 5, 5. What the hell? The only evidence they had against me were my confessions. My confessions, those confessions were obstructed, were taken under torture. I signed lots of papers while I was blindfolded. Imagine somebody would beat you and threaten you with rape and threaten you to bring the rest of your family, torture them, arrest them. Wouldn't you just go and finish it and just sign those papers and get finished with it?
In response to international outrage at events, King Hamad al-Khalifa confronted the allegations of human rights abuses head-on. In June, he established a commission of inquiry, chaired by Sharif Bassiouni, one of the world's most respected human rights investigators.
The step taken by His Majesty was a courageous step to open up the government in every institution for an international figures to come that nobody can doubt about the credibility to come and to fact find, to make a fact finding mission about what's happening in Bahrain and publish a report.
The inquiry, concluded last November, was damning.
إلى استخدام القوة المفرطة وغير الضرورية
Sharif Bassiouni publicly condemned Bahrain's broken criminal justice system, in which many of the accused had confessed under torture and were denied fair trials. In the weeks covered by the report, he said five civilians had been tortured to death, more than a dozen unlawfully killed by security forces, and hundreds improperly dismissed from their jobs. A national commission was set up to turn Bassiouni's recommendations into actions. But critics say it's done little to address the freedom of hundreds of political prisoners or to bring those accused of torture to account. Ahmed El-Sa'ati is one of its Shia members. While he says there's been some success, he admits progress is slow.
We don't have magic stick. We cannot change overnight. We need a time. The main thing, the trust. We have to build the trust between the government and the opposition followers. There is no trust, unfortunately.
Yet that trust is going to be hard to find. 2 months after Bassiouni presented his report, protesters were still being beaten, shot, and abused. Tear gas still used in excess. At least 15 people have been killed.
This happened only last night, and this guy was shot directly to the face. So I don't see it. I mean, maybe it's been said to the media, but we all know it's not true. No, none of us would believe this. This government is not willing to make any change.
Bassiouni himself, back at the University of DePaul in Chicago, was quick to express his concern at the slow pace of reform.
I think the public is going to come out in the end and saying, you know what, you're holding all of these investigations behind closed doors. This is a whitewash. And I think they would be perfectly justified in saying so. There have to be major economic reforms and political reforms and major constitutional reforms. You have to choose between maintaining the unity of the family or the regime or the unity of the country.
Sure enough, in the last few weeks, young men, infuriated by the lack of political change, have been turning to violence. Pent-up anger exacerbating Bahrain's sectarian divide. Senior Shia cleric Issa Kasim has always urged that protests be peaceful. But last month, even his tone changed when responding to claims that police had abused Shia women. The response in Shia villages was swift. Within days, 41 police had been injured in clashes. It's got these Sunni loyalists worried. They've maintained a tented camp across town from Pearl Roundabout since last February. Inside, they display what they say are recent images of street violence being instigated by agent provocateur from Shia Iran.
They threw Molotovs with the petrol to them, and they do many damage for them. This is one photo here. The second photo you can see here, taxi driver, old man, they beat him and
killed him.
Already died, this guy.
For 15 February, Sunni and Shia people are living almost no problem, nothing. But since 14 February we are in Bahrain, or we be here because 14 February people are, they are not Bahraini diagram. They have outside, maybe from Iran.
It's a fear echoed by others. This is a meeting of the National Unity Assembly, a loyalist political movement that denounces sectarian violence.
They were asking for the overthrow of the government, and the sectarian words that were used in those days frightened everybody. Every country in the world, you have to keep law and orders. You have to keep law and orders. You cannot say, leave them, don't do anything. Yes, they are blocking the roads, but leave them.
Last February, members of the largely Shia opposition Al-Wafaq party walked out of parliament in protest at brutality on the streets. Now they meet here, in the open air. They say they'll return to parliament when the king gives it real democratic power. So far, he's offered little. On this occasion, the main speaker is Nabil Rajab, a leading human rights activist who has become the unofficial leader of the February 14th movement. As the official opposition parties have been marginalized, his group has become the principal focus of efforts to unseat the Al-Khalifa regime. After stepping from the stage, Nabil heads to a February 14th demonstration in downtown Manama. It's clear the fervor of February 14th, 2011, has not subsided. If anything, people are more determined. A year on, they're still on the streets. Still the same demands. The response is still the same. Very little, if anything, has changed.
You see, the situation is exactly the same. I think we got to go, yeah.
I would say that Bahrain has suffered a lot in the last 1 year. It has suffered a lot. And the wounds that were opened has split the people apart, which is extremely dangerous in any country. We all love our country. We were families, we were neighbors, we were living together. Please, let's go back to where we were. The government got the message loud and clear. His Majesty got the message. His Majesty said that we are willing to accept the people's demand.
But for Dr. Nada Daif and hundreds of others charged with committing crimes against the state, it doesn't feel like the king is listening. She faces 15 years in prison, separated from her children. She's been tortured at the hands of the regime, but refuses to give up, taking every opportunity to get justice.
I sent the letters to the officials of Bahrain, the king and high officials at the government. And those letters include the description of the torture I was subjected to. This is to the king. This is to the Minister of Human Rights. This is the NSA. This is to the Ministry of Defense. This is for Mr. Bassiouni, Sheriff Bassiouni.
And what's happened since?
Nothing. No reply. They don't care. I don't think they care much about their reputation anymore.
After 6 months in prison, Saeed Ahmed was freed in December. His conviction was retrospectively quashed. But like many others who've suffered at the hands of the regime, his experience has only hardened his resolve.
One of the first places I wanted to see was the Pearl Roundabout. Unbelievable what they done, but this place, I'm sure after the victory, it's gonna be reconstructed. It is all, the image of it is in our heart. Every day we live the moments of the Pearl Roundabout because the feeling of freedom was there and it remains in our heart and there is no way of taking that feeling off.